Hello, and welcome to the Am I a Bad Mom podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Christy Ritz-King. I'm a trauma therapist and a maternal mental health specialist, and perhaps most importantly, a mom of three. I've met many incredible women over the years in the various careers that I've had, and seemingly no matter where they are along their motherhood journey, they are powerful, they are brave, they are incredibly successful in their lives, and no matter what, they all ask the same question at least one time. And that question is, am I a bad mom because fill in the blank? There are any number of blanks to fill in there, and this podcast aims to provide you all the reasons why the answer to that question is unequivocally no. Every single time, the answer is no, you are not a bad mom, and we're here to show you today exactly why. So welcome. We can't wait to help you feel better about the parent that you are. Hello, and welcome back to this episode of Am I a Bad Mom podcast. Today, we are going to talk about a question that I have a lot of times for my clients, a lot of times for my friends, a lot of times for myself, as we are facing what is largely right now known in the media as mom burnout. The question is, what if you didn't? And I know that sounds funny, right? Like, what do you mean, what if you didn't? What if you didn't what? But I have found myself a lot lately in both my own life and in session with other clients asking that. Well, what if you didn't do that? What would happen if you didn't fill in the blank? Whether it's do the laundry or host the holiday or buy all the presents for your family or work at this job that is sucking away your soul. Like, what if you didn't do it? What would happen? And I will tell you with almost 100% response, including from myself, is like a blank stare. Like, not only do I not know the answer to that question, I have never even thought about it before. It's never even occurred to me to not do this thing that I'm complaining about having to do. And so we're going to talk about that today because I'm seeing it a lot, but also I think that it is not talked about enough. Again, I say in the media, I've seen a couple articles. I don't know where. I feel like the New York Times probably, because I feel like that's where I see everything, but about this thing called mom burnout, where women, moms are admitting that they are exhausted from the job of being mother. And certainly that falls into the purview of, am I a bad mom? Because I'm sure if you are one of those women who is either openly admitting or feeling burned out from the job of being mom, you are definitely simultaneously questioning if that means you're bad at it. Because that tends to be what happens, is that people think, this isn't enjoyable. I don't like this. That must mean I'm a bad mom. And I'm here to tell you, no, you're not. And also, of course, it's not enjoyable all the time. Some of these things that we're meant to do as mothers aren't enjoyable. And that's just the bottom line of it. So to call it burnout feels, I don't know, it feels both simultaneously over dramatic and dismissive at the same time, because it sort of insinuates that like we have a choice in all of it. Or that it's all on us that we're burned out. Like it's all we're the reason that we're burned out, not the lack of support and the lack of global care and the increased, you know, expectations and stressors that are placed on us. So I want to sort of get all that out of the way first. I acknowledge that if you are feeling burned out as a parent, it is not 100% your responsibility nor your fault. That said, there are some things we can do about it that maybe we're not doing already, and that might help. And so I'm going to talk to about a couple bullet points, let's call them, that have to do with this question of what if you didn't. And let's talk about first burnout and what that means. And so burnout is this thing that we kind of throw around, but what is it? It's both a physical and a mental exhaustion. Quite frankly, you lose your, it very closely resembles depression in that you lose your motivation. Things that used to be enjoyable aren't enjoyable anymore. You can't sort of garner the gumption to get out and do the things you need to do. And it can be in all areas of your life. It can be in one area of life. We hear a lot of people talk about job burnout. We hear a lot of people talk about, you know, school burnout. A lot of kids have burnout when it comes to like athletic endeavors, because we start them often so young and so intensely that they, by the time they get old enough to actually choose the sport, They're burned out on it. It is something you can recover from. It isn't like an end sentence for whatever the thing is you're doing. So if you're burned out as a mom, it doesn't mean you're never going to be a mom again. But it is something that you can heal from. It happens a lot to moms in times of transition. So we talked about the three R's of self-care on an earlier podcast, and those include rituals and routines. And so if you think about times in life, seasonality, seasonal-wise, where your routines and rituals are sort of thrown up in the air as a parent, those can often be the times that lead to burnout the most, because we have this, you know, the train is running on the tracks, and then suddenly there's a diversion, or there's a cow in the middle of them or something, and we get kind of all thrown off. Holidays, where the responsibilities tend to fall to the mother more than anyone else, you know, and that includes birthdays and holidays like school vacation days and summer. Your job usually still happens in the summer if you're working outside the home parent, or even if you're not, if you don't have a job outside the home, your world is going to change a lot in the summer months versus when kids are in school. And if you don't have a job outside the home, sometimes that means that you are the primary caretaker for the full day and weeks and months of summer, because, you know, camps and sitters and all those other things are not in the budget if you're working on one salary. You know, if you have a job, two jobs, three jobs, and you have kids suddenly home from school 8 hours a day, whether it's summer or whether it's a week at the holidays or whether it's, you know, a long weekend because of a holiday, there's a huge disruption to your routine and your, if you have them, your rituals. And that can over time lead to burnout because you don't recover from that. You're sort of ratcheted up in all of the things that are expected of you and you don't really have time to recover. You just kind of go back to baseline, which is where lots of things were expected of you, instead of extra lots of things are expected of you. So it's not like you get into, it's not like you go through the holidays, the winter holidays, and suddenly you have like a week off to relax. That's not how it usually works. It's usually like everything's ratcheted up and then the kids go back to school and you go back to your regular already busy routine. So that's part of how you get to burnout, is that there's no recovery time. It's, you know, you're running along up here, then you ratchet up to a level above, and then you come back down to the already high level. There's never a drop down into a rest and relax and restore time. And that's how you end up at burnout, because you're always sort of functioning at a higher level than your nervous system maybe can handle long term, or than, you know, a human body can manage long term. And then you add even more to it, and then you still just come back to that regular already too high level. So that's how we get there. That's how we get to burnout, is we're already expected to do many things, and then these seasons change and we are expected to do even more. And then we just go back to the regular where we're already expected to do too much to begin with. If you're listening and not watching, my hands are all over the place. I'm up, I'm middle, I'm low, I'm up, I'm middle, I'm low. So if you can picture me sort of giving you those stages of already too high and then a little bit higher, that's what's happening on camera. So what do we do? And why am I asking people, what if you didn't? So let's talk about the holidays. So many people in my office, or even just like my friends on the street, you know, like it didn't even have to be clients necessarily. It's just, I'm around parents all day long. They're my friends. They're the neighbors, they're school people. The volunteer jobs I do are very often related with parents and schools. So I was hearing throughout the season of the holiday how exhausted people were because of the sort of magic of the holiday and how that magic falls on them, whether it's hosting 30 people for a holiday dinner or whether it's buying all the presents for people that aren't even your relatives, like that, you know, or maybe your spouse's or partner's relatives, you know, maybe you make cookies for 30 coworkers, like all of these things that over the years have maybe become expected of you, were taking a toll on people this year. More, it seemed like, than ever, but I that's anecdotal. I have no idea if that's true or not, but it just felt like more people were realizing, holy cow, I'm asked to do a whole lot during this season. And so one of the very first things I would ask beyond that, like, what if you didn't, which I think is an important question to ask. So let's start with that. What if you didn't do it? What if you didn't make the cookies? What if you didn't send out the cards? What if you didn't buy all the presents for your partner's family? What if you didn't do that? What would happen? And I think it's worth asking of yourself and also anybody else who's involved. obviously, if you have like a 5-year-old kid, you're not going to ask them, like, what if I don't want to be Santa? Like, you're not doing that. But, you know, if you're buying Hanukkah gifts for somebody and you don't necessarily, like, you might find out that those people actually are fine if there's never a gift exchange, if you just come for dinner and, you know, you don't need a hostess gift every year because they have enough candlesticks or whatever. You know, asking it of you and of them can sometimes be beneficial to you both. Only you know those relationships. So I'm not suggesting you do this for everybody. You know those relationships and you know who could be helpful. I'm thinking specifically of, like, for a while, I thought I was responsible for all of the gift buying around the holiday season, including for my husband's family. There was a year where I was like, why am I doing this? Like, they're not even exchanging them anymore. Like, we used to get together and exchange. We weren't even getting together and exchanging anymore. I was going out and buying things, like, just so that I could say that we bought them a present. Like, it was just, it was too much. And it was, nobody was actually really expecting it. And it became a thing that I said, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. And he was like, oh, okay, fine. Like, you don't have to. So the question of, like, what happens if I don't? Well, we answered pretty quickly and got me to where I wanted to go. And I've talked on this podcast before about, like, I used to make a calendar with pictures of the grandkids. And then when there became more grandkids, it was harder to sort of gather them all. And it became like a much bigger task than just me uploading 12 photos to Snapfish and giving my mother-in-law a calendar. And after a couple years of doing it, I kind of asked, like, are you okay if I don't do this? Because it's a lot. And I feel like I'm not doing a great job. And I would get very stressed out about being equitable to all the grandchildren. And it was a lot. So I stopped and she was fine. She made her own. Or maybe one of my sisters-in-law took up that. I have no idea what happened, but it was fine. And I needed to let go of that expectation. And also I needed to recognize it was mine for me. I said it. I thought it was something that somebody else was counting on, but in reality, it was me. So when I asked the question, what happens if I don't? The answer was nothing. Everybody's fine if you don't do it. And I find that when I work with folks who have, you know, these struggles within a family, that's often the answer is, oh, nothing happens, or the other person takes over and it's okay. There's not going to be a big, huge argument about it. So the first question is, what happens if I don't do this? But then the next question that goes along with that is, who decided I needed to? So often I go back to my laundry story here. When all of my children were born, so I had been doing laundry for at the very least 15 years, let's say, of my marriage. I'd been doing laundry. I'd been doing the kids' laundry. I'd been doing both of our laundry. I'd been folding. I'd been putting away. I'd been, you know, whatever, all the clothes all the time. It was daunting, to say the least. And it never occurred to me to do it any other way because I was home in the house more often than my husband. I was working, but I just worked from home, or I did freelance stuff, or, you know, along the years it changed and came and went. And so in my brain, it was, well, I'm in the house, so I have to do these house chores. And then one day or one, I don't know when, I noticed my husband was refolding everything that I was giving him. He was refolding it I would put it away. He would unput it away, refold it, and put it back away. And I was like, wait a minute. Do you not like the way I fold your clothes? And, you know, he was kind of sheepishly was like, well, you know, I have a way. And he's very, and so I spent a good deal of time just angry at him. I'll be honest. I spent a good deal of time just enraged that he dared complain about the way I was doing it. Mind you, he did not complain. He took his stuff out. He refolded it. He put it back. He never said a word about it. He never asked me to do it different. He never did anything. He just did it the way he liked it. And I took that as like a personal attack. Like, how dare you not like the way I fold your clothes? I fold your clothes for you. You should just like whatever I do. Anyway, I'm just being honest with you. My initial reaction was to be mad at him. And then after a bit of time, not much, I don't think, I said, you know what? You can do your own. And at that point, I'll be honest, I think it was probably out of spite. I was like, fine, do your own laundry then. And he was like, okay, that's it. There's no argument, no fighting. Never did he act as if he was being put upon. He just said, okay. And I said, well, fine. If you're okay with it, like, then do it all. And he was like, okay. And he did. He did all of the laundry, including the children's. That said, I think he did all of the laundry for maybe, and he'll correct me, so don't you worry. If he's listening to this, he'll tell me if I'm wrong. But I think he did all of our laundry for maybe a month, meaning like four times, because we're once a week laundry people. I think he did all of our laundry like four times. He realized how huge a job it was. And then he very quickly taught the children how to do their own laundry and gave them days to do it. And it instructed them, like took the time, showed them how to use the machines, showed them how to do the stuff. At this point, the youngest was, I think, still too little to kind of do it on his own, but he shared a room with his older sibling. And so the two of them did it together. And I think they worked it out even between the two of them, like who brought it downstairs, who shifted it from laundry to dryer, that kind of thing. Like they had it all worked out. I had nothing to do with any of it other than I thought in the beginning to argue with him, like, no, these children are too young to do their own laundry. And then I was like, girl, you back off. Like you put this in his hands. You don't get to now come in and micromanage it. So I didn't. I backed off. And sure enough, since that day, our children have done their own laundry. He has done our laundry, mine and his alone. I still get angry every time because he doesn't put my clothes away. He just dumps them on my dresser at the end of the cycle. But I, much like him, who folded his own stuff, figure I can't really complain. He's doing my laundry. Like I can't really complain about how it gets done exactly. He hangs things. Like he does it well. He's not a like dump one thing into the next, you know, ruin all the clothes and so that you never have to do it again. My siblings tell a famous story of my mom washing something with a red shirt so that she could pretend that she ruined all the laundry and never have to do the laundry again. I have no idea if that's true, if that's just family folklore, but it's a pretty funny story. Like, you know, throw a red shirt in and then you'll never have to do laundry again. He did not do that. He does it well and I can't complain. And this is all a very long way of saying, when I sat back and asked myself, why am I doing this job? What happens if I don't? The answer was nothing. It gets done by him. And the answer to who decided I needed to do this was actually me. I put that, that was a self-imposed chore that I decided somewhere along the way was my job. And then when I opened it up, my husband was like, yeah, of course, fine, I'll do it. And then part two of that was, I didn't teach my children how to do their own laundry. I decided it was easier to just do it myself. I decided for whatever reason, and maybe even subconsciously, I'm not sure if I had a conscious moment of deciding this, but I decided this is my chore. I will do this chore. I'm not bringing them into this. It's too much work to bring them in. It's more work to bring them in than it is to do it myself. And so this thing that was burning me out, I got to offload. When I really dug into the sort of purpose behind it and the intention behind it, I got to offload it. So that's part two and three of that. So part one was, who decided I needed to do this? And when the answer was me, I then moved to part two, which was, well, what actually are my expectations for this? Was I doing it because I wanted to be some kind of martyr and like be the laundress and get credit for it? Was I doing it because I just thought that's what I was supposed to do? By the way, that's probably the most likely answer was like, I thought I was supposed to. I was the mom that was home. I was supposed to do the laundry. Or what then are my expectations? Are my expectations that I'm going to handle all of the housework because I'm home more than he is? Which might be the answer because we're so programmed to think that's how it's supposed to work, especially in like a heterosexual relationship. We think the woman is supposed to do the housework and the man's supposed to leave and go to work. Even if we don't think it consciously, even if we're so sure that's not what we believe, somewhere deep down because of years of training, we believe that. Those are the rules. We, meaning collectively, all of the women and all of the men believe that that's how it's supposed to be. And so we have to tune in to that expectation and be like, wait a minute, this expectation's off. I have this expectation that I'm going to handle everything in the house. Oh, and also go to work. That's not okay. He has that same expectation, again, subconsciously in most cases, and that's not okay. So we tune into those expectations. We ask ourselves, what happens if I don't do this? Who decided I needed to do it to begin with? And what are my actual expectations for this thing? And then once we have those expectations, we have to set boundaries accordingly. And setting boundaries is an internal job. It's not just telling him, okay, you do the laundry now. It's also examining my own stuff of how do I think he needs to do it? Am I okay with the fact that he's making the kids do it? You know, all of the things that would cause me to feel uncomfortable with a boundary. He's free to set his own. We decided, okay, you're going to do this now. far be it for me to say, and here's how you have to do it. He gets to decide that. And wasn't I lucky that he did decide that? And he didn't sort of play that, you know, false, you know, I don't know what I'm doing, so that I was then forced to do it anyway. He didn't throw the red shirt into the white laundry. And so that sort of system works for all of these things that can bring on burnout. So if you are feeling unmotivated and angry or tired or resentful or any of the things that come from feeling like too many things are happening to you at once, the first, very, very first thing you need to do is sort of look at what is it that is contributing to that? Where are the parts of this that feel too much? And can I control any of them? Because in some cases, the answer to that is no. But where can you? And so if it's, you know, home chores, or if it's a job that is like soul sucking and there's a way to change jobs, you know, looking at the parts that are contributing to it, and what is it that you can control and change? And then in those parts that you can control and you change, asking yourself the questions of, what if I don't do this thing? Who decided I needed to do it to begin with? And then what are my expectations for it going forward? And within those expectations, then start to or maybe for the first time, set some boundaries and establish some parameters around it. So back to the holiday piece, if you are somebody who has always hosted, you know, one night dinner for something, whatever holiday it is, if you've always hosted it and it's gone from, you know, 10 people to 20 people to 30 people to whatever, what happens if you don't do it that way anymore? What happens if you change the way that it happens so that you are less burnt out by it? Who decided you needed to do it that way? And if the answer isn't you, then can you talk to that person and say, hey, I'm not sure I can handle this anymore. Part of that boundary setting is saying, this is your expectation for this day, but it's really all falling on me and I'm not sure I can handle it anymore. How do we want to go forward? It's okay to be collaborative in this. It's not all on you, but it should be involving other people if they are already involved. For instance, when I sometimes say, what happens if you don't do this? Very often the answers are, well, this person will be mad, or this person will be mad, or my mom won't talk to me anymore, or my sister will be pissed, or whatever, whatever it is, or my partner will, you know, be mad, angry at me. Then the next few questions have to be between the two of you. If they are the ones who decided it needed to be this way, well, then you have to work out with them. What are your expectations for this thing, this holiday, this chore, this whatever, the way our house looks, whatever. And also then, what are your expectations for our relationship? Because I'm showing up here to tell you that this feels untenable to me. So how are we going to work this out going forward? If your expectations are that we host a party for 50 every St. Patrick's Day, well, what are you going to do to make that happen? Because your expectations are here and my workload is here. Your expectations are not, you are not meeting that you personally are not meeting those expectations. You're expecting me to. And so we need to discuss that and figure out a way to make it more equitable. Maybe you still have the party, but maybe the person who wants the party to look that way takes a much bigger role in it. And my experience has been, with both personally and professionally, more often than not, the other partner is amenable to it, is okay with it, and therefore it works out. It's not always the most comfortable conversation, but it works out. And so having those conversations are not always as scary as they might seem at the beginning, when you realize, like, oh, I've been doing this thing all these years because the other person expects me to. You might realize that, like, they don't know how much it's burning you out. And so that's not their expectation. Their expectation is not to put this burden on you. Their expectation is just to have the thing at the end. And if it means that it's burning you out, well, then they'll change their expectations. We need to give people the benefit of the doubt in that arena too. So you're starting with the, what happens if I don't? And then you're moving into, who decided I need to do this anyway? And then from there, you tune into what your expectations, or whoever else is involved, their expectations for the thing are, and then you set your boundaries accordingly. And if you do that for the things that feel too heavy, or that feel like they trip you up every season, or that feel like they lead to burnout all the time, then you can start to alleviate some of that stress and hopefully then alleviate some of that burnout. So when we talked on the other episode about burnout and how to heal burnout, this is a sort of natural second step to all of that, because part of asking for help and setting boundaries and renewing yourself has to start with, what if I didn't do these things? Who's expecting me to begin with? And how do I set boundaries and create structure around this new expectation or this new reality? That not only will help you heal the burnout, but it will keep you from, hopefully, from finding yourself in that cycle again. Because, you know, burnout comes when our work is more than our support. And so if we can kind of ask these tough questions of ourselves and those around us of, how did I get here? And what if I didn't do things the same way? What would happen? Then we can hopefully keep ourselves from burning out again and again and again. Again, not 100% within our control, but what we're doing is trying to look at the stuff that is within our control and help ourselves out that way. So like almost like a little follow-up to the burnout episode, more on the like, what is my role here and how can I help myself and enlist others to help me as well. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for the Me Time segment, or we will talk about some fun things I've noticed this week. Hey, listener. If you appreciate what you get here as far as support and camaraderie and feeling like you're not alone, then I think you should really check out the Women of Wonder community that I run. It is exactly that. It is a community full of support and camaraderie, and you are not aloneness. It is meant to replace the old-fashioned Facebook groups that we used to love before it got so mean and snarky and Facebooky. It is a place where you can ask the questions you have, where you can share the joys and share the sorrows and expect a supportive response, non-judgmental response. We meet weekly via Zoom, so we have people from all over the world that come and join us. And there are other supports like newsletters and message boards and all of the things that you can and want and need in your life to provide you that support and scaffolding to help do this job we call motherhood. Check it out on my website, wonderincwellness.com. It's called the Women of Wonder Community, and you can sign up today and get 2 months free if you do a year subscription. If you have any questions, again, always send me an email, but I would love to see you inside. Hello. Welcome to the Me Time segment. This week, we are talking about what if I didn't? And there really isn't like a great segue into that. So I actually am going to talk today about something that might help with the whole overload, not enough support thing. Stick with me. This might sound weird, but I'm going to talk about some podcasts that are news / political podcasts, because I have felt a shift very recently in social media world, in person world, and everywhere as we get closer to presidential election time. We are in the midst, probably when this airs, we're somewhere on the tail end of the Republican National Convention or the Republican primary season, and we're still in the middle of a couple wars in the world that we're involved in directly or indirectly, and people have lots of feelings about that. And we are heading into a presidential election with a very polarizing election season, two candidates. And so this is ripe with possibility for burnout and overload. If you are somebody that wants to have the information, so you're seeking out some of this stuff, it can be overwhelming. And even if you're somebody who doesn't want the information, it can be overwhelming. So I have three podcasts that I have for you to listen to that are, two of them I think are good for the sort of getting the information you need without deep diving too much and feeling overwhelmed by it. And the third one is very much a deep dive and could very well make you feel overwhelmed, but it keeps you maybe from having to do a lot of the deep diving yourself. They sort of summarize and get some things in there. And also you hear some pretty interesting information on there too. You're going to know immediately where my political allyship falls. And so if you do not agree, then you probably aren't going to like any of these podcasts. If you don't agree, you're probably also not listening to this. So anyway, the two podcasts that are out there, and they're not new, it's just I think that they make sense with this idea of like trying to keep ourselves buffered from overwhelm. One of them is a New York Times podcast called The Daily. Sorry, I get them confused. One is called The Daily, that is a New York Times podcast, and one is called Up First, and that is an NPR podcast. And they are each roughly anywhere from like 10 to 30 minutes in the morning. They're almost never 30 minutes. They're like 10 to 20 minutes in the morning, 10 to 15 minutes in the morning. And they basically just give you a recap of like the top stories of the day. I started listening to both of them during pandemic lockdown because it was almost like an anxiety thing that I needed information as often as I could. And for me, I found those to be neutral and soothing enough that I wasn't going down the rabbit hole that I could very well have gone down. Interestingly enough, my middle child claims that the sound of the opening of one of those podcasts gives them like PTSD flashbacks because I listen to it every single morning when we were in lockdown. And so to them, that sound is like triggering of that awful time of our lives. So again, Up First by NPR and The Daily by the New York Times. And then the third one is a podcast called Pod Save America, which if you're listening to this, you probably know about all three of these podcasts because you probably have heard of this before. But Pod Save America, it's a bunch of political pundits that used to be staffers in a variety, including President Obama, but in a variety of different capacities. They were speechwriters, they were PR, you know, comms people. And they have considered since then, I think, kind of made it their job to keep what they think the world informed of sort of the what's going on in politics. And so that is definitely much more of a deep dive, but they often have guests on. Like I just listened to one the other day with the governor of Minnesota. And so you get some information and some background and some history that you might not get otherwise from them, not only because of their former jobs, but because of the people that they know and the people they're allowed to have on as guests. They also had Governor Chris Christie on to talk about some things. So they are fairly balanced. I'm sure there's plenty of people who tell you they aren't, but I think they're fairly balanced. And so that's more of a deep dive. Like, here's what's going on. They have lots to say about the Republican primary season. They have lots to say about sort of the campaign of both President Biden and former President Trump. And so that's not going to keep you from being overwhelmed, but it might be what you need to keep yourself from going down some rabbit holes. If you listen to them, that might be just enough to sort of satisfy what, you know, your curiosity without having you kind of get overwhelmed by it. So those are my me time recommendations today. It's all about election season and keeping yourself informed without overwhelming yourself with what is about to go down. So that's all I got. Again, thanks for listening. Till next time. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you heard something today that made you feel better about your parenting and about yourself. Remember, if you have a moment, we would love a review. It helps more people to hear about us. If you like the episode, share it with your friends. And of course, subscribe so that you know when it's going to drop every single week. Thanks again. Until next time, keep asking those same questions and know that the answer to "Am I a bad mom?" is always no.